All right, members, if you can take your seat, the Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Pilcher, please call the roll.
Chair Shove.
Here.
Vice Chair Placencia.
Here.
Ranking Member Benjamin.
Present.
Representatives Anderson.
Here.
Baker.
Here.
Caruso. Chambliss.
Here.
Cross.
Here.
Daniels.
Here.
Franklin.
Present.
Garcia. Griffiths.
Here.
Maggard. Porras.
Here.
Rudman.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I welcome everyone to the Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that if you have something on you that makes noise, it's turned off. Today, we'll be hearing a presentation from the Department of Education on the Effective Access to Student Education Grant, also known as EES. Each year, EES recipient institutions are required to submit certain data to the department. DOE then compiles a report and submits it to us, along with recommendations for minimum performance benchmarks. This report was received October 1st, and I wanted to ensure the committee is up to speed on where we are with the program as we begin crafting our recommended budget. Suzanne Pridgen is Deputy Commissioner of Finance and Operations. You are recognized, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Second time in a couple of weeks. So thank you so much for allowing me to come up with and have an opportunity to talk about Florida's state-sponsored scholarship and grant programs for post-secondary students. Florida's state scholarship and grant programs are administered through the Department of Education's Office of Student Financial Assistance, which I'll refer to as OSFA. OSFA's mission is to increase access to post-secondary education for Florida students by providing funds to those who demonstrate high academic achievement and to students who may not otherwise be able to afford a college education. These are the basic categories of our state scholarship and grant programs. They are merit-based, need-based, and tuition assistance, and I'll provide you with a quick overview of those programs. Merit-based programs are awarded based on a student's high school academic achievement. Awards are given without regard to demographic or financial factors and focus on the student's performance in high school. Merit-based programs account for around 56% of the state's total financial aid and the appropriation for the 23-24 year. Florida's popular Bright Futures Scholarship Program is the state's largest merit-based program. We offer four award levels, different award levels for Bright Futures. The need-based student assistance programs are exactly what they sound like. The awards are based primarily on the student's need, student's ability to meet the financial requirements for attending a post-secondary institution. These awards may be available to all students, or they may be restricted to subsets of students within varying factors. Additionally, the award amount may vary according to each recipient's calculated need. These need-based programs account for around 24% of the financial aid appropriation for this year. The third category is tuition assistance. This program provides tuition assistance to those who are attending a private post-secondary institution in Florida. This program represents approximately 12% of the state's student financial aid for the current year, and this is EES. And I'll speak more about, the Effective Access to Student Education Grants for Florida residents, and I'll share more about that program in just a few minutes. All of the other financial aid programs that we administer account for around 8% of the financial aid assistance this year. Here you can see a graphical summary of what I just broke out and the dollar amounts. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to focus on the tuition assistance program, and this is the William L. Boyd IV Effective Access to Student Education Grant. This grant was created in 1979 to aid students in attending independent post-secondary institutions, and this provides funding to those private colleges and universities. Awards are not based on a student's demonstrated need or specifically tied to academic performance. Eligibility and disbursement are managed by the participating institutions. The maximum award this year is set at $3,500 by the GAA for the 23-24 academic year. This chart summarizes the history of the EES program with respect to annual appropriation, expenditures, and the maximum award amount and the students served. Over the years, legislative updates have been made to the program, which affects the annual maximum award amounts, which is directly correlated to the maximum number of the full-time equivalent students and the annual appropriation. In 22-23, the EES program appropriation and maximum award were at their lowest levels, and however, the 23-24 appropriation and maximum award amount significantly increased to their highest level since 2018-19. The 2023-24 appropriation is $134.8 million, with again that maximum award amount of $3,500 per recipient, and that's expected to serve approximately 35,000 full-time equivalent students. As a result of House Bill 5601 that was passed during the 2021 legislative session, participating institutions that receive funding are required to submit an accountability report to the department by September 1st of each year, and they have done that. The report must include data in a format prescribed by the department to calculate the following metrics: the access rate, the affordability rate, graduation rate, retention rate, and postgraduate employment or continuing education rate. The department was required to recommend minimum performance standards that institutions must meet in order to remain eligible to receive this funding. Earlier versions of 5601 suggested that EES participating institutions should sustain at the year five level, as shown on the screen, which include a 53% access rate, affordability rate of $6,343, a graduation rate of 53%, a retention rate of 68%, and a postgraduate employment continuing education rate of 49%. This table indicates that the 25-26 performance data would be used to measure institutions for possible 26-27 fiscal year EES eligibility at the original suggested benchmarks. A first look at the performance data received at the conclusion of the 2021 year indicated that many of the institutions were not at those desired levels of performance. Therefore, a gradual step pattern was recommended to ensure strategies and practices were implemented to improve the five critical areas of measurements of performance so that providing the EES funding wouldn't interrupt those students already receiving. If the EES future rates and benchmarks mentioned in this table were used to determine eligible funding, the department would use the 22-23 fiscal year performance data, highlighted in yellow, and hold institutions to a 21% access rate, affordability rate of $10,149, a graduation rate of 21%, a retention rate of 27%, and a postgraduate employment continuing education rate of 20%. The next two slides provide a look, and I'll go to the other one in just a second. These provide a look at the 22-23 performance data received from each of the participating institutions. The second slide, which I think you have in front of you as well. This is a visual of the institutional performance against the year two benchmarks, where an X indicates that the institution did not meet the required metric indicated at the top of the table. Three X's out of the five metrics results in ineligibility recommendation. In this case, institutions would be labeled with an N in the eligible column. The yellow shaded area represents the number of institutions that met the year two benchmarks and those that did not. Only one institution failed to meet the recommended eligibility criteria. However, 33 of the 34 did meet it. The institution that did not meet the recommended criteria was Miami International University of Art and Design, and they actually closed this year as of September 30th. Looking ahead to the 23-24 year, two new institutions became eligible to participate in the EES program, Herzing University and South College, and they'll also be required to submit annually their EASE accountability report to the department, again, by September 1st. Key departures from the EASE program include Miami International University of Art and Design, as I just spoke of, who determined that in late September 2023, all Florida campuses would cease enrollment and officially close, meaning that the institution will no longer participate in the program. Johnson University will no longer be participating in this year. Actually, they are participating this year, and their closing is Florida-based campus at the end of this year. And that concludes my presentation. If you want to look more or learn more about our student financial assistance programs, there's all the information that you may need, or you can contact myself, and I'd be happy to help you as well.
Thank you very much. At this point, members wanted to open it up for any questions you may have. Representative Franklin Gallup, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thanks for this presentation. You know, it was great work we did last year in reference to having some performance-based metrics to ensure that we have the incentives in the right place for education to, of course, be successful using taxpayer dollars. But I noticed that two schools, one closing, one leaving. Is that because of the performance-based metrics, or that was already on the horizons, you believe?
I am not aware that it was because of the performance-based metrics. I'm not sure.
And I was only asking the question, too. I was just kind of curious. You might not know this answer to this question around what happens to those students or those learners. I mean, I'm assuming, of course, they have to go other places, absolutely. But is there any help or guidance that they can kind of receive to further their education? Are they now just in debt? Like, what is that?
From my understanding, those schools did reach out to other institutions to help those students.
Representative Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions.
Absolutely.
Thank you. The first one, looking at kind of the number of students that were served last year, it looks like just short of 42,000, and that the EASE program is about 12% of our financial aid package. Does that roughly correlate with the number of students who are going to these private institutions versus our public institutions? Or is that data that you could provide at a later date?
I could provide that.
Okay.
Is that the second one?
Yes. So the second question about the affordability rate. So that seems like the metric that is the most difficult for a lot of these institutions to attain. And we're asking these schools to go from a cost of about $6,300 to eventually a little over $11,000. So are there recommendations that you are making to these institutions to help them improve affordability in light of cost kind of across the board increasing?
Certainly, if they, of course, they're all aware of the metrics, so I do know they're working towards that. Certainly, if they called us and wanted to talk about that, we certainly would be open to helping them do that. They're usually seasoned, and they know, you know, what to do and how to look at things, so they're taking it upon themselves, to look at where they're at.
And on that, I'll add that the goal is to get these institutions to lower their tuition, to increase accessibility. And so that five-year glide path goes, I believe, from 11 to 6 in reverse. All right, members, any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And at this time, we're going to open it up to the public. First card is for Clyde Deo with ICUF. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you very much. I am Clyde Dio, a managing partner of the Regional Economics Consulting Group, and we also represent the Independent Colleges and Universities of Florida, ICUF, and have worked on several ICUF economic projects. We also have been tasked to actually conduct the survey for the EASE Metrics Accountability Report, as well as the development of the alternative metrics, which I will discuss today. As we all know, the five EASE metrics include access rate, affordability rate, the graduation rate, a retention rate, and the postgraduate and continuing education rate. But we believe that the current EASE metrics do not address and capture the nature of the ICF institutions, which basically cater to different and very diverse population. Certain student body demographics make up, socioeconomic backgrounds, and in fact, some of the schools, the ICF schools, basically cater to the underserved population. The income level, older students who actually go back to school in order to improve their status in life, transfer in students who in fact move out from one ICUF school and move into another ICUF school. And lastly, the ICUF schools also contain a larger institutional variety of goals and objectives. These are the things that in fact has got to be considered. Unfortunately, the current EASE metrics do not capture this. So what we did was we actually developed alternative metrics that parallel with the EASE metrics. The alternative metrics add another 15 metrics on top of the current 5 EASE metrics, or a total of 20 metrics all in all. Unlike the EASE metrics, which focuses on the first time in college students, the alternative metrics has a broader focus, which includes Florida resident undergraduate students, Florida resident full-time students, or the Florida resident FTIC, or first time in college students. So it basically encompasses a bigger population. The EASE metrics uses a total student population based on our survey of around 10,891 students for accountability reporting, which is a lot smaller than the alternative metrics, comprising of around 26.7 of the total eligible funding for EASE. In 2022, 163,000 students were in fact enrolled across 30 ICUF institutions, and slightly over 40,000 full-time equivalent students received the EASE funding. The alternative metrics also uses a larger student population, which helps mitigate some of the significant variances or variability found in the EASE metrics. So we conducted a survey asking information for the 5 EASE metrics, as well as the 15 alternative metrics. The response rate was 100%, with all the 30 ICUF institutions submitting the responses on time, giving us enough time to basically calculate the results, complete the report, and submit it on time. The data for both sets of surveys are summarized in weighted by enrollment. For reporting purposes, what we did was we didn't organize them into 3 groupings: institutions with the 5 largest enrollments, institutions with the 10 highest enrollments, and all institutions. This was intended to mitigate the variability among the ICUF institutions and provide a more rounded view of the ICUF performance. Take note that this EASE accountability report was submitted to the Florida Department of Education August 31st, 2023, before the deadline of September 1st, 2023. It was handed to Commissioner Diaz at 11 a.m. on August the 31st. And the exact information that was submitted or that was provided by the ICUF institutions to us were in fact the same information that was submitted to the Florida Department of Education. So as I mentioned, we actually look at different categories, the same thing as metrics, same thing as the EASE metrics. We have access rate. Okay, like the EASE metrics, the alternative metrics measure access rate by estimating the percentage of students who in fact qualify for Pell Grant. 24,497 out of 47,000 students qualify for Pell Grant, compared to 6,345 of 10,891 under the EASE metric. So you can see how the difference between the students that in fact covered. The top 5 and 10 largest institutions average 56% Pell Grant eligibility, while the average for all institutions combined is 53%. The alternative method under access rate also measures the percentage of full-time undergraduates who are first-generation students. So it's not just the FTIC, the first time in college, but also the full-time undergraduates who are first-generation students. The underlying data varies because of the diversity of student body size and their measurement, rather than meaningful differences in access overall. So when aggregated, the top five and 10 largest institutions average around 37% and 35% respectively, while the average for all institutions is 32%. The alternative method also measures the percentage of full-time undergraduates receiving assistance from the Florida Student Assistance Grant Program. And this particular method is, in fact, not included in the EASE metrics that we have right now. So the top five and 10 largest institutions average around 20 to 27%, respectively, while the average for all institutions is 28%. The percentage of the undergraduate who are, in fact, 25 or older ranges from 0 to 73. This age range indicates a higher overall rate of returning professionals. Older students are coming back to school in order to improve their status in life. That's a big difference. The top five and 10 largest institutions average around 44% and 36% respectively, while the average for all the institutions is 30%. And lastly, the alternative method under the access category also examines 25 years of age and older. So we're in fact including the older students in this alternative method, as opposed to the current metrics, EASE metrics. So it's reasonable to expect that some portions of the 25 and over cohort in ICUP institutions would be ineligible for this reason and therefore bias the access rate calculation. If the access calculation are in fact adjusted by age, the total access rate across all ICUP institutions rises to around 79%. This alternative calculation of access is starkly different result compared to the access rate in the EASE metrics. It is also much higher than the analogous calculation on the larger student body available in the alternative metrics. Another thing that we also did was affordability. So to measure affordability, the alternative did not just use one measure unlike the EASE metrics. It basically takes into account the following: the percentage increase in tuition and fees over a given period of time, the average federal student loan debt for the first-time full-time students, the federal loan cohort default rate. I mean, these are very important things that, in fact, affect affordability. And lastly, the first time full-time institutional aid awarded, which are not covered by the EASE metrics. And another thing, we also talk about student success, which is another category. And similar to the EASE metrics, the alternative also looks at the retention rate, where it calculates the percentage of students who were in fact enrolled last year and came back to re-enroll in the current year. That's one of them. That's found in the EASE metrics. The alternative, however, metrics also measures the percentage of students who are enrolled in specific education programs, such as educational programs, such as programs of strategic emphasis, the PSE, which are a list of degrees and programs selected by the identifying areas of high demand for post-secondary graduates and providing an opportunity to identify emerging and evolving business sectors and occupation. That is one of the metrics that we, in fact, developed. These are degrees identified by the SUS Board of Governors. And unlike the EASE metrics, the alternative also takes into account transfers. These are transfers in. On average, about 12,000 students transfer within a given calendar year, representing around 22% for all institutions. Without including transfers, especially transfer-ins, the graduation rate in the EASE metrics that we are in fact looking at tend to in fact skew downward. It's going to be lower because you don't take into account transfer-ins. We believe that this is a very important consideration when estimating the student success as well as the graduation rate. Another category is the graduation rate. Like the EASE metrics, the alternative method also looks at the graduation rates for full-time, first-time degree, certificate-seeking undergraduate cohort graduating within 6 years, right? And the alternative also measures the percentage of full-time, first-time degree-seeking undergraduate cohort graduating within 8 years. And the reason why is because not everybody can finish finish the degree in 6 years. Some have to work and do other things. That's why it takes them a long time to actually finish the degree. So we also look at the thing, 8 years. The alternative metrics also measure completion rate, which includes students who started at an institution but transferred and completed at another institution. Completion rate for us, which includes transfers, transfer-ins, is very important because at the end, this is the measure of student success. You know, you see students moving from one ICU institution to another because what happens there is that if they move out from that institution, if they transfer to another ICU institution, they're not counted in the East, in the current East metrics. That's why we're saying completion rate is a better measure for this. So basically, we're saying excluding them in the East metrics will result in lower student success and graduation rate. And lastly, the alternative metrics measure the completion in the STEM program as defined in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security STEM designated degree program. This is measured by dividing students completing the programs of strategic emphasis or the PSE by the total Florida resident undergraduate graduating during the current academic year. And we also look at workforce and continuing education similar to the current EAST metrics. And similar to the EAST metrics, the alternative method also measures the percentage of graduates who are in fact employed 120 days after graduation and those that pursued postgraduate degrees 120 days after graduation. So we did a thing too. But another metric also that we develop is basically estimating the average full-time annual wage of estimated full-time employment. So we look at the average, how much are they going to be making over a span of time. It also determines the total Florida resident undergraduate students who graduated in the previous year. So those are measures that are not included in the EAST metrics. It also determines the percentage of the number of students who graduated and stayed in Florida. And why is this important? Why is it that we have to determine the number of students who graduated in this institution and stayed in Florida? Because these are the students or graduates who, in fact, will contribute to the economy of Florida. More than 30% of our graduates, in fact, go somewhere else. And those people that are, in fact, going somewhere else will never be able to contribute to our economy. That's why it's important that we track down these numbers to make sure that they are, in fact, major contributors to our economy. I'm an economist, so we look at these things that way. So then we also, the last one, which is a non-numeric stuff that we did, was the pillar of excellence. So the pillar of excellence basically just describes in non-numeric way what makes the school stands out. There are schools that are very good in healthcare, schools that are very good in engineering, and those are the things that we want to like highlight, you know. So basically, the five EAST metrics are quite limited to measure the overall performance of ICUEP institutions. And because of the variations in school and their objectives, such as certain body, you know, I mentioned that certain the demographics make up, socioeconomic backgrounds, income levels, student age, especially older students 25 and above, who in fact return to school to improve their status in lives. And of course, the student intra-transfers that are not being counted in the current EAST metrics. The alternative metrics capture some of these factors that are not captured by the current EAST metrics. That is why we believe that the alternative metrics is a better approach because it captures this variability among ICUEP institutions. So as a result of the survey for both EAST metrics and alternative metrics, we have been very, very transparent. And in fact, we published this in our ICUEP dashboard. And anybody can access this through icuf.org. The dashboard includes estimates of earnings per degree for the first year, the fifth year, and 10th year. So we basically made a projections as to how much they're going to be earning over the span of 10 years. And lastly, of course, I would like to thank the committee chairman and the members of the committee for giving us this opportunity to present ICUF's alternative metrics and to tell our side of the story. Once again, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Members, do any of you have a question? Yes, sir, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So did you guys fulfill the state's metrics for ease?
Yes, we did.
And then you developed what you believe to be other
alternatives
to be considered.
So what we did was we actually gathered information and data in order to calculate and estimate the ease metrics that's required by the state under the statute. But at the same time, we also gathered information from these 30 universities and colleges to, in fact, like calculate and estimate the alternative methods.
And do you know how you did under the ease metrics versus everyone else?
Yeah, there's a lot of variability in this. So what we did actually was we tried to group them together according to size. So we have the 5 largest universities, then the 10 largest universities and all, basically, to come up with the estimates. And you can, I think you have a copy of the report. It's there. And
I'm sorry, Chair. Go away. So.
Go ahead.
But on the other hand, we also have the individual performance of each school. It is also in the report. It's kind of long, you know. And on top of that, we also have the individual performance for the alternative metrics for each school. And you can also access that in our dashboard. And in fact, we have copies of that.
How did you do under the ease metrics?
The ease metrics?
Yes.
I have my colleague here, Moore.
Is this Matthew Moore?
Matthew Moore.
Matthew is with ICUF. You're recognized, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Matthew Moore. I'm the senior economist with the Regional Economic Consulting Group. All of the data that we received for the survey for the ease metrics were identical in every particular to the numbers that were submitted to the Department of Education. All of our calculations would have been identical except for we had a slight variance in how we calculated the affordability metric because we considered the federal aid. We read the statutory requirements and it appeared that in producing that calculation, those numbers should be included. And so overall, the only reason that our numbers are different for the specific DOE metrics in that report are there's an inclusion of 4 schools that aren't part of ICUF. ICUF is a voluntary representative group.
I don't mean to cut you off.
Sure.
But I just want, under the metrics that we currently have in place and that we actually report on, mm-hmm. How well did you do?
We did no different.
Okay.
And under the ease metrics.
Yeah. Right.
Our alternative metrics are, because ICUF is so diverse, that many schools are, you know, very high or very low in even the alternative metrics. It's a very diverse group, and the intent behind the alternative metrics was to present a more complete picture.
Well, that was the problem because we...
In many cases.
Oh, time out, guys. We're going to go back to the chair now. We can't all talk.
Sorry.
So,
thank you, Mr.
Was that all?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other members with questions? Rev. Franklin.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And one quick question I have was around the access rate. You said that in the current ease metrics, we don't give credit for all ages, it sounds like. Can you explain to me with your metric, are you giving equal credit, I guess, for all ages, it sounds like?
Well, when we looked at the access rate numbers and how it's calculated, the concept of how it's measured is... When you look at the age of the students, many of those students that are part of the denominator in the equation would not really be fundamentally eligible for the EASE program because it's less likely. We don't know for sure because of the structure of the survey, but it's less likely that the students that are over, say, age 25 or 28 are as likely to be eligible. And so when you have a number that really they would never be included, if you were to take them out, then the overall rates improve. Does that make sense?
So that's why we're actually proposing this, like people, that students that are 24, 25 years and older should be included in the calculation.
Or excluded. Because yeah, right now we're calculating.
Time out, guys. Hey, we one right. At a time.
Sorry.
Rep. Franklin.
Yeah, just a little clarity. You said included or excluded.
You're recognized.
Sorry, I'm not familiar with the rules. Please.
You're doing good.
All right. The way it's calculated currently, all the students, regardless of age, are part of it. What we've kind of just identified when we produced the alternative metrics were, if we take those students that are above a certain age and exclude them from the calculation, because they really, we don't know for certain whether they would be eligible or not, but it's reasonable that it's less likely that they're eligible. So if we exclude them, then it changes the number because, you know, if there's 15 students and five of them are really never would have qualified in the first place, why would you put them in the denominator, right? And then, so you say you got 9 students eligible out of 15 versus 9 out of 10. That's the kind of...
Yes, you recognize.
Thanks for that. I understand it now. It sounds like excluded. I want to go to the next question around the graduation rate. You mentioned 8 years instead of 6. Yeah. Does that also include credit hours taken? And the reason why I bring this up, I'll make this quick statement, is the reason why these metrics are so important to the state. Big concern around state dollars not being used efficiently. And also, like you mentioned before, the amount of money it costs to attend an institution. And want to make sure that we can lower that burden by ensuring that the institutions that are being attended, regardless of the deficiencies you mentioned, have the wraparound services to make sure they're successful. So my question is around that graduation rate. When I hear 8 years, I'd hope to hear it's not that a student's taking 15 hours per year and they keep failing, but they keep getting loans and they keep using dollars, and now they have $350,000 of debt for something that can't pay that back. And so my question is around, are you wanting to extend, or is the idea of that metric to extend just the time frame because maybe they're taking 4 hours one semester or 3 hours one semester, or are you also trying to intend them to be able to take that many credit hours? So, for example, even in the SUS, what we do now is we charge something called an excess credit hour fee, and that really ensures that we prevent students from unnecessarily taking so many credit hours and getting in more debt to ensure they can kind of graduate on time.
Mr. Moore, you're recognized.
I don't believe that's directly addressed in the way the surveys are constructed. So the idea is it just more the former, where if the ICUF institutions are very diverse and you've got people that are working and trying to get either their first or second degree or additional education, you know, they're not as likely to be able to attend full time. And so, you know, when we're looking at graduation rates, you know, there are people that may start in year one, and like you said, maybe they're only able to take 6 credit hours a semester, and it just takes them a longer period of time. I think that's more the intent of what we're trying to measure, as opposed to, you know, somebody who's taking more than the full load for 8 years in a row. I don't think that's...
I'll add to that. Currently, we're only measuring full time, mm-hmm. so we're not measuring those anyway.
Right.
That's the reason why we're actually...
Okay. Do you have any other questions, Rep? Rep Baker, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And more of a statement than a question, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
I just want to thank you guys for providing all this information and really going above and beyond what you have to do. We were very concerned about it. Some people, I think, were concerned about it. So I just want to thank you very much for doing this and being here. And I do think it's really crucial and it's important to have a diverse options for high school students or adults in a lot of cases of these ICUF schools to decide where they're going to go. So I think you guys are doing great. Thank you.
All right. Any other members? All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Also want to recognize one of my favorite members, former members out in the audience, President Hawkins. It's good to have you back with us, even though you're on that side. But it's good to see you. Thank you. All right, folks, this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? All right. Seeing none. Representative Franklin moves, we rise. Without objection, this meeting is adjourned.